Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is January 19th. We are live from New York City and Thailand today.
It's February.
Oh my lord. Nice. I'm just, behind the times, I guess.
If it's January 19th, boy, do I have some ideas for how to play the next month. First things first, I'm listing all my NFTs on Blur.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a missed opportunity, you know, another airdrop that Gary Gensler has protected us from in the United States. Thank you. Thank you to the SEC and to everybody out there protecting the U.S. customer. Yeah, this one kind of sucks. You know, it's like we're not like the most active NFT traders, but, you know, we participate in the market. And for everybody that doesn't know, Blur, one of the biggest NFT marketplaces out there, just did its airdrop. Gave out like $300-400 million of free money that nobody in the US could participate in.
Okay, so according to the data, like something like 90-something% of the eligible like airdrop recipients claimed their airdrops. So I think like you can make a case that like everybody just used a VPN, right? And like our listeners are probably podcast enjoyers. They probably use NordVPN.
Eligible probably means like not in the US.
No, I mean like this is like a stat that I heard about like eligible wallets, like fully like I'm sure, you know, like the rhetoric has been very much like, thanks, Gary. Like fucking like I missed out on generational wealth here. But in reality, like I think in general, people just kind of like VPN'd it and claimed it. At least that's what the data seems to show. Because I think like, like the Blur airdrop has been like rumored for literally since the inception of the Blur platform. Right. They've been telling us to plan for an airdrop. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if you were like active on Blur, chances are you were doing it for the airdrop, and so you're probably just like not phased when they're like, oh yeah, you're gonna need like a VPN to access it, you know what I mean?
That's fair. That is fair.
So it opened at $5 a token, and then very quickly thereafter it went to 75 cents.
What was this $5 start like, because it immediately just like, if you look at the chart, just completely falls off a cliff. Like what was that? Like how did that initial price even start?
I would assume it's set by Uniswap or else on like centralized exchanges if that's like where they start out, right? I don't know if you remember the Aptos listing, but they you know, because it's like its own layer one, like there is no Uniswap, right? So they just kind of like coordinated like across like centralized exchanges, like where it was going to list at. And then like market makers just kind of like, you know, stepped in with like borrowed tokens and like provided liquidity there at that price. And so, you know, like the initial pricing of something like this, especially like an airdrop, right, where it's like much more like on-chain, like DeFi native, is probably set by like a Uniswap pool. It's like you put in however much ETH and or USDC and however much of your token, and you just let the market sort itself out from there. So, you know, a little bit of like a misread, right? This is kind of an issue because, airdrop like tax policy is complicated. But effectively, once you claim your airdrop, it counts as income, right? And the question is generally like, there's this notion of like, is there actually a market on which you can like sell this, right? In order to like price like what that income should look like, right? How much tax you should be paying. And so hopefully for like Blur airdrop recipients, that $5 number is like obviously like way too high. you know, if it starts at 5 and you get taxed at 5 and then like you hold it for, and it wasn't like long, it was like 10 minutes less.
Yeah,
or less,
yeah. Immediately. Like, you
know, one trade, right? And I mean, the same thing happened with Optimism, right? Where like they priced it at 3 and it went to like a dollar like very quickly, or like 80 cents, I think, like the same day. If you're like, you know, if you're claiming your airdrop, like it's just one thing to be mindful of is that like that this is taxable income. And so, you know, for someone like me who made the same mistake as everyone else with airdrops has made, when I claimed my ENS airdrop, it was worth like a certain amount. And now those tokens are worth like, you know, less than 10% that amount. And so I'm like liable for tax on something that I never actually like got the income for because I didn't sell it immediately. Whereas like if I had like taken those tokens, sold them at whatever price, like the day that I got them, and then bought back in immediately, you know, it gets complicated with wash trading rules, but basically I could write that off as a tax loss today. Whereas like you can't do that with an airdrop. It's just like income. So basically every time you get an airdrop, you just have to sell it immediately.
Matt, don't spoil the mood. Blur just saved the market. So we need to be thankful to them. We need to, I mean, it is interesting, you know, there's just like a massive injection of liquidity just coming straight in, where people have free money and they can now spend it on various things. And you would expect that, yeah, for the most part, people will just sell and it'll go down. And I don't know, it went from $5 to 70 cents or whatever, 60 cents initially. But it's basically just been up only since then, you know. It's like went to $1.38 at the highs yesterday, and now it's at $1.21. So almost doubled from the low it's doing well. So I don't know. We'll have to do a Blur deep dive maybe, but I don't know. You think this thing? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I have two interesting things that I think we can talk about when it comes to Blur. The first one is that if you look at the fully diluted valuation right now, and you know, it's
FTV
around,
is a meme, bro.
FTV is a meme. but it's at like 3.6 billion versus the market cap, which is 460 million, right?
Yeah.
So I think you were saying it's something like 12% of the token supply got allocated to this round of airdrops, and they're going to do like further rounds of airdrops to incentivize continued activity on the, on their platform. Like it's an interesting tokenomic approach just to begin with, right? Where like they didn't distribute all of the supply like initially, right? Like they're doing it in rounds. The other thing that I think is really, really interesting is that if you take that FTV meme number at 3.6 billion and compare it to OpenSea's latest round of like funding, right? They raised it, I think it was like a $10 or $12 billion valuation. And so this is saying that like this platform is worth approximately a quarter of that, even though fees are zero. It has no revenue, right? Like OpenSea does have revenue. Well, it had revenue.
It had until revenue Blur came until in yesterday
and undercut the market.
No, OpenSea announced yesterday that they were moving all fees to 0%.
Temporarily,
yeah. But I mean, regardless, Blur is also doing more volume than OpenSea is. Consistently now. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what the future of NFT trading even looks like, right? Like, if you have no platform fees and no royalties, like, how does anybody make money, right? Is it just mints, and then you just hold back part of the collection, or, you know, like, I don't know. This is
not, I think that's pretty much podcast. It. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. We have another NFT pod, or Kron has should we plug it? Let's plug it. Check out the Cool Hunt, guys. Yeah,
check out the Cool Hunt, everybody.
It's very cool.
Okay, yeah, so I don't know. I think the whole NFT market is kind of in a weird spot right now, but I do think that Blur is going to dominate for a while now. I think actually what happens with this is, like, there's probably going to be like a bunch of siloed marketplaces that come up, and like, you can trade everywhere, but it's like, if you trade on some of these, like, I don't know, closed, like, walled garden kind of marketplaces, like your own marketplace, like Azuki has their own marketplace, Bored Apes have their own marketplace, you get extra access and things like that. Just because then you'll probably have to get pay, like, royalties,
token, like, another NFT, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Where that just gets, like, minted for, like, each, like, sale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, we'll see. Anyways, let's see. Blur. Anything else you want to hit on Blur? I think, like, in terms of token price, though, like, they're already doing more volumes than OpenSea, right? OpenSea raised at 10, 12 billion. This is 4 billion fully diluted. I think it could really pump for a good bit.
I mean, I don't understand who's buying it. I don't understand Blur, so I'm pretty mid curve with this comment. I just never looked into it.
Blur is great. I mean, it's a great, like, it's a great tool. Like, it's a great marketplace.
Really, yeah. I mean, I've been trading on Uniswap, actually.
It's
Uniswap, my aggregator of choice. But I guess I'm paying fees there that I shouldn't be paying.
Yeah, that's the thing. Blur has no fees, and it's like, it's just fast. It's nice.
And, like, OpenSea, like, pushed back for a while that they wouldn't let Blur, like, trade on their marketplace because they weren't, like, you know, sending fees to OpenSea. And then Blur just, like, fucking circumvented it by, like, hacking the Seaport contract itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You love to see it.
Yeah, you love to see it. Building in the bear market.
But yeah, like, I didn't really follow it. I haven't really used the product. But there is one thing that I know for sure, which is that, like, who the fuck is buying it?
That is a good question. I don't know who's buying the token.
Like, you can buy it now on, like, momentum alone, right? But, like, who bought it after that initial dip?
I mean, they must have a lot of true believers, because you're right. Normally, you don't see airdrop tokens pump like this at all. The last one I remember was maybe Uniswap, where it, like, initially ripped. Or no, initially it was very high, like, dumped, and then it just ripped. And then the inevitable dump came again. But, I don't know.
Anything else?
No. Our listeners are probably already tuned out. They're like,
they're gone. They're long gone.
Okay, let's get back to everybody's favorite topic, dude. Doquan. Our listeners, if there's one thing we know for sure, is that our listeners love Doquan. Well, I don't know if they love Doquan, but they love listening to us talk about Doquan.
They love Doquantent.
Doquantent. What is Doquan up to now? Man is cashing out hundreds of millions of dollars of Bitcoin secretly, apparently. While hiding out in Serbia.
Dude, Doquan, he is plugged in. His battery
tapped in.
he's plugged in, right? As in, he's been charged.
He has been charged, yes.
So the SEC charged Doquan with fraud and specifically, like, marketing securities without making proper disclosures. They're making the case that because like, Luna Foundation Guard operated Anchor, and Anchor promised a certain yield, that constitutes an investment contract, because a yield bearing instrument probably should, right? Mm-hmm. This is why like it's important now more than ever to like not call something in your product yield when you could call it staking rewards or something, right? Mm. You don't generally want to like advertise yield. SEC finally charged Doquan. Who knows what took them this long? Like, it's not like there's a lot of facts and circumstances that have changed, but apparently Doquan has a secret stash of 10,000 Bitcoin, and he sold more than 100 million of them through a Swiss entity since UST collapsed. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened to the Bitcoin. Like, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
He just has it. I mean, it's as simple as it was right there all along.
Yeah, it's just sitting there. He just has it. Yeah. that is pretty wild. You hate to see it, you know. Man's just running with the Bitcoin.
You hate to see it. You really do, right? Because this is liquidity that was meant to serve as a backstop for any kind of like price volatility on UST itself, right? Like, mm-hmm. it was supposed to be the case that like this Bitcoin was a like liquidity source where like you could redeem your UST for $1 worth of Bitcoin at any time. But by the time UST collapsed, like they still hadn't implemented this like redemption mechanism. Mm-hmm. It's time for conspiracy Matt or tinfoil Matt.
Tinfoil Matt, let's go.
What if Doquan depegged UST purposefully?
Oh my God. Okay, let's hear
so that he could run with the Bitcoin, right? Yeah, so before the Bitcoin went into the redemption pool, before they were able to build out that functionality. What if Doquan depegged UST so that he could just take the Bitcoin and have it?
I don't know if you want to turn yourself into a fugitive. Like, as nice as it sounds to have a ton of Bitcoin, you still have to be on the run.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal for sure. But like, I don't know. I've been living nomadically. It has its upsides.
That's true. He's probably just got his wife and kid. His kid is named Luna. So, you know, he's got the memories.
His kid is named Luna?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh my God, that is so fucked. What is this kid going to be like? What is this kid's life going to be?
Oh man, yeah, wow.
Holy shit.
You come to the Decent Crypto Podcast for conversations about Doquan's child's life. kid is fucked. What do you think is worse?
Salute emoji for the kid, man.
What do you think is worse? The kid being named Luna or Mike Novogratz having a tattoo of of the Luna logo on his arm?
I mean, 1,000,000% the kid, right? Like,
thing is, Luna, you could just pass it off as a normal name. You know, you can just say like, it's just a normal name, normal girl name.
Yeah, but if your name is Luna Kwan. If your name is Luna Kwan, you have to change something, right? Like, you don't have to laser the tattoo. Part. It's fine, right? It sucks, but we all get tattoos.
Did not think about that. That's funny.
If your name is Luna Kwan and you're growing up in Dubai,
there's no way he can go to Dubai, dude. He's got to be in Serbia.
I forgot he's in Europe. Yeah,
he's in Serbia. He's gonna have to stay in Serbia or I don't know. Maybe Russia will take him.
Serbia sounds not that fun.
It doesn't sound great. What's his name?
I wonder if we have any listeners from Serbia.
Probably. We have listeners from close to 100 countries. Suzu is in Dubai. But maybe right. he's in Saudi, actually. Apparently, he's backed by the Saudis. That's why he's chilling so hard. That would be hilarious. Can't you see that being a thing where they're just like, yo, Suzu, come in? I mean, I'm sure if this is a real thing, like, I'm sure they were already working together beforehand, but from the Saudi point of view, it's just like, yeah, we just have this guy, he knows a lot about crypto, he can just manage our crypto portfolio. And from Suzu's perspective, it's like, you have immunity.
Yeah, and like, you know, like, US-Saudi politics is beyond my knowledge, but I mean, it just seems like something you do to like to poke a little fun at someone yeah. who's like kind of an ally, kind of not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if you do that to
poke. You think Suzu is managing a crypto portfolio? Wait, back up. Wait, I missed this part. Hang on.
Yeah, dude.
You think the Saudis are like this man?
Dude,
this is our guy.
Anyone who can run up $1 million to $4 billion, like, at least you know what you're doing on some level. If you then run it down to zero, you can blame Do Kwon. And this is why Do Kwon is so fucked. Basically, everybody can just blame him. Everybody does just blame him.
Yeah, because Do Kwon was at the heart of 3AC's collapse. He was at mm-hmm. the heart, which was at the heart of like massive deleveraging and the fucking yeah. like, Genesis bankruptcy and the yeah.
Yeah, and Alameda's collapse, which Alameda, then led yeah. to the FTX fraud being uncovered. Yeah.
Yeah, blame Do. Telling you, man, dude, LunaCon is a much worse.
LunaCon is a tough, tough look.
shout out.
Yeah, yeah, shout out. If you ever want to come on the pod, LunaCon, you're more than welcome.
We'll learn Serbian.
I think she's like,
we'll get a translator.
She's like 1 year old, 1 year old, 2 years old.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, I don't think she's listening to the podcast yet either.
Oh, man. Let's see. All right, anything else on Do Kwon?
I mean, as long as we're having, like, a fun episode. All right, there was a great tweet, which was, like, would you rather, it's a Twitter poll, would you rather invest in Three Arrows' next fund or SBF's next exchange?
Oh, wow. Definitely Three Arrows next fund.
Yeah, I feel like they were at least trying.
Yeah, they were definitely trying. They were successful until they were unsuccessful. They, I mean, I guess you could say that about anybody, but SBF, at least, like, they weren't just straight up stealing the whole time, you know? Like, they did make a lot of money initially, like, in the market. Like, so,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I would just okay. be I, sure I to more. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, okay. Would you yeah, rather yeah. invest in Multicoin's next fund? Or OpenSea equity at the last valuation?
Oh god. Probably Multicoin again. Because,
really?
Yeah, their approach is just, like, buy every shitcoin possible, you know? And, I don't
it's
know.
It's, like, already my
there
approach.
Will be a bull market at some point, yeah. There will be a bull market again, and, you know, one of those will rip.
Yeah.
Did you see the thing where... one more thing on Do Kwon. Did you see the thing where he was selling tokens to Jump? At 40 cents a token.
I did see that. What the fuck?
Yeah, while it was trading on the open market at $90 a token. So is Jump implicated in some way now? Like, well, what's the scene?
I mean, the relationship there is, I think, like, complicated, right? And I want to say that they were just, like, a strategic investor, right? So... Mm. you know, like, there was like a liquidity parameters thing that like, Jump put in place, after, I want to say it was like March 20 or like May 2022 or 2021 when like, when ETH tanked, right? And like USDT also like slightly depegged there. And, it recovered, but Jump was like, look, guys, we have like some ideas for like how to prevent this. And so there was like a maximum like mint burn mechanism that like on chain that was meant to like, go check out our Luna deep dive, listener, if you're still curious. But there was something where like basically when you operate a model like this, because the blocks are coming out like slower than the like centralized exchanges, right? Like trading there happens like more frequently. You need those to also be like the more liquid markets. And so there was a mechanism where like after a certain number of million of UST got minted or burned in a given day, it would like mint it or burn it for you at like a worse rate. So initially it would give you $1 per UST, $1 worth of Luna for per UST that you burn. And then it would like deteriorate to like 0.99, like 99 cents, 98 cents, etc. It wasn't good enough to save them, but it reflects that like Jump was actually like a strategic like partner. They were like advising, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if this is just like normal VC shenanigans where like you're buying the tokens for pennies on the $100
right, to begin with.
And like here it's just like here we just like found out about it.
Yeah, I think what's different is that normally you don't get those tokens distributed out and then you're not able to sell them immediately. Normally they're locked up for many years and you get them, you know,
they weren't locked prior. Like
I mean I don't know, we don't really know. But yeah, I have no idea what's going to come out of this in terms of Jump, but it's interesting to see that. Okay, what is going on with Binance?
Binance bullish news. So
nice.
Binance FUD is clearing. This is your daily Binance weather report. The FUD is clearing. there was FUD earlier this year, or maybe late last year. I think it was late last year, right after the FTX thing. I think it was in maybe December, where the Department of Justice and like, you know, like a cross bureau like task force was basically saying how they were preparing to like charge Binance with like probably like a litany of crimes. And it's probably related to like not doing a good enough job on KYC or AML or whatever. But it could be other stuff too, offering securities, I don't know. You know, the specifics were never really like leaked, right? Binance FUD was sort of weighing on the market for a week or two there. And it was right around the same time that like people were starting to speculate whether or not Binance's reserves were actually like fully backed. And remember, people were like stress testing it. There were billions of dollars in like outflows per day. And then like there was like some weird like Tron based USDC conversion to ETH based USDC or something. Some shenanigans there, and they tried to do a proof of reserves, but it wasn't very good, and it didn't account for like negative balances, like for like leverage. At any rate, there was Binance FUD, and some of the Binance FUD has been cleared. So basically, like they withstood all the liquidity like tests that people sent at them. Still solvent for now, as our super fan likes to say. Solvent
for now.
You know, just this week we got news that like Binance is expecting to just have to pay a fine to get like civil charges and not like criminal charges, and to pay a fine and like not pass go, not collect $200, but like they're gonna be like okay, right? They're settling effectively. And on that news, the market like really ripped. I think this was like what propelled Bitcoin to like 24K earlier this week, right? You know, good to see that, I guess. you know, this is like Kraken just paid a fine, right? Like I guess this is just what we do now. Like it's just like an SEC budget hunt.
Right.
It's a bear market. Everybody needs budget.
That's the thing. Yeah, everybody's just gonna have to just settle for all of their crimes.
It's extortion.
Except SBF. SBF is chilling. He's also part of the VPN crew.
Do you think he collected his Blur airdrop?
Probably he needs it. Okay.
No, he doesn't. Look at his guarantors.
That's true. Who are these people? These two Stanford people, right?
Like, so
probably friends of his parents.
Well, a little background, Karan and I went to Berkeley, and so we have nothing but the utmost respect for the Red School.
That's true.
So this is like a story that's been cooking for a few weeks now, where like there was a motion from the prosecution to like reveal who SBF's like backers were for his bail. So the bail is like ginormous, right? It's hundreds of millions, I think.
250 million, yeah.
250 million, yeah. Which means that like if he skips town, that's what his like guarantors are liable for. It doesn't mean he actually put up 250 million, right? So there was a motion to like reveal who they are, and then there was a big pushback from SBF's legal defense, and then just this week we found out who these people are. So we have one, the dean of Stanford Law School. I cannot make this shit up.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I know.
And then number two is some like senior researcher in data science at Stanford as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm split on this because I'm like, yeah, it sucks to be those people. You thought you were going to be like able to like just like secretly like sign off on this, and like it's like your friend's kid, right? Like, you know, they're not going to like skip town. Or you hope they're not going to skip town.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like, this is some shady fucking shit. Like, you must have known this was a possibility, especially if you're the dean at Stanford Law School. You probably at least have the contacts to ask, like, hey, is there a chance that, like, my name will get revealed, right? Now we know who to call.
Look,
forget your bail bonds person, okay? You need their phone number in your wallet when you get arrested. You need their business card. Hit up Stanford Admissions.
The dean of Stanford Law. That's not great.
In other SBF related news, did you see Nishad Singh is going to plead guilty?
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know. Like, all these people seem like they're in a bad spot. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. That's pretty much, yeah. That's like theme of the it's basically like, yeah. You didn't even have to tune in to any of the rest of the SBF shenanigans. Like that pretty much sums it up. Like for the entire saga.
did they find Sam Cherukho yet?
Good question. I guess not. It was him and Nishad were like the last ones, right?
Really? I think Nishad has been there the whole time. He's been cooperating the whole time, I think.
I thought Nishad was like, we didn't know where he was until like this story broke this week.
Really? Interesting. Because
like two other people are cooperating, right? Like Carolyn Ellison and then one of the other FTX people. Anyway, enough FTX content.
Too much FTX talk.
Okay. You want to talk about the first ZK EVM?
The very first. Yeah, go ahead. This is your lane, Matt.
So the first ZK EVM was announced, but there is controversy as to which one it is. This is like, I saw a great meme where it was like the Spider-Man meme, where they're all like pointing at each other and they're all labeled first ZK VM. ZK Sync
is Polygon, ZK Sync, and then who else?
Well, so there's Scroll, but I don't think they're really contenders here. I think it's Polygon and ZK Sync. ZK Sync is just like really following the Optimism playbook here, where like they're just kind of lying. I'm not even like saying this because I like disclosure, I work at Polygon, but they released a mainnet that like doesn't have a prover, right? And then it feels like the proofs are like kind of an important part of like a ZK system, like that's the whole point,
right? Yeah, zero knowledge proofs.
Yeah, that's the idea, at least. ZK Sync, we've been fucking playing with it forever, trying to farm that airdrop, right? Like,
right.
Years now.
I have the Aztec wallet and the whole thing, you know?
It's a little bit like, what's the point of lying, right? Like, ZK Sync is already really well-backed. They have a ton of launch partners. They don't need to be like, when they got called out on it, the CTO of Polygon was like, hey, like, just clarifying, like, is your guys' mainnet like running with or without a prover? And the guys just like, stop asking me this. It just feels like pointless, right? Like, they don't need to be doing that. Like, being first in crypto is like, it's good for Bitcoin. It was good for Ethereum. But like after that, like, I don't know, like it's not necessarily like first mover advantage. Right. You're talking to the guy who bought some of the earliest ever created NFTs because I thought that they would have historical value. And then it turns out that it was just someone's project that they forgot they made.
Nice. Which ones?
It's started with an I. It was like immortal player character, and ooh, it predated like I think it predated CryptoKitties. Don't fact check me on that, but definitely predated Punks, right? And like all the others, I mean it's like a really old collection, and it was to the point where there was no art. Like you go to OpenSea and it was like white squares because there was just no art. And then the developer came in and was like, oh shit, people are buying my thing. I should finish that project. And they dropped the art and stuff and it was like kind of lame. And then like someone found like a link to the URL for like the site where they were minted and like it was kind of lame. And then no one bought my bags.
Nice.
Being first is not always like the best, right? But I am excited about the ZK EVM setup here, right? I think that I've been talking a lot lately about the Starbucks theory of crypto, if Starbucks moves in next to a small coffee shop, it's actually bullish for the small coffee shop. Because all of a sudden it's a coffee neighborhood and that's where like people meet up to like get coffee, and some of them are gonna go to Starbucks and some of them are gonna go to the little coffee shop. You get spillover, you get people that are like, Starbucks is corporate, this place looks cuter. And on average, it's good for like, this is like backed by data, on average it's good for your smaller coffee shop if the Starbucks moves in next to you. I think crypto is very much in the same space where it's like you might come over to play a crypto game and find yourself like neck deep in like NFTs, or maybe you come over to like yield farm a bit and then you find yourself neck deep in NFTs. All roads lead to NFTs.
NFTs.
My first on-chain transaction on Ethereum was with ENS, right? After we like hung out one night and you were showing me like all the art and I was like, I'm not sure, man. And then you showed me ENS. I was like, oh, I get it. And then I went down the rabbit hole. Right. I just think that like in general, there's a little too much like competitive talk in the space.
I see.
Isn't sports, you know, like it's not generally just a competition. Like, so I think ZK rollups are really, really good technology. I think they enable a lot of really cool use cases. I think they're safer than optimistic rollups in general, but also in practice, because everyone just uses bridges with optimistic rollups because of 7-day waiting period. And so I'm really excited about this. And nice. We will see, I think end of March is when mainnet is set to go live.
Nice. Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah. People have been waiting for ZK EVM rollouts for a long time. And ZK has been talked about forever. And like, I think it adds a lot in terms of scalability and privacy being the main ones. So yeah, should be cool.
Yeah.
All right, final thing, Matt, more bullish news. Is the bull market back? Hong Kong legalizing crypto? What exactly is the scene here?
Hong Kong is legalizing crypto, like buys, sells, transfers for all of its citizens, which is super sick. And like, I didn't see that one coming at all. Like,
why is this such a big deal?
It's a big deal because it reopens an avenue for people to like access crypto from one of the largest financial centers in Asia, right? Mm. And you know, there are like obviously like even if they're not like super legal means of getting cash into Hong Kong from mainland China, like there's very heavily like used routes for getting cash into Hong Kong from mainland China, and those routes tend to lead to something like crypto. You know, like when China banned crypto, it was like extremely bearish for Bitcoin in the, you know, 5-day term. Like every time they've banned it, you know, it's always China fed, right? This is like the reverse of that. I think you have a population there that's like very like digital native, right? Very tech savvy, like completely leapfrogged like credit cards and went straight from like cash to like mobile payments. And so if you're like Solana Pay, you just want to be in Hong Kong right now. Like there, you know, there are very few other places to be.
I see.
It's pretty exciting. I have no idea why the Chinese government isn't applying more pressure to stop this from happening. That's my one thing. But the Chinese government is too busy printing money. Have you seen this?
No.
The money printer is back on in China.
Really?
They are printing money. Yeah. They're first of all in money printer mode, like just from like a policy perspective. But also I saw that they're giving they're airdropping cash to their citizens. Like everyone in Beijing is getting like $6 or something.
What is this, dude? $6? it's airdrop for ants.
Look, the Blur airdrop easily could have been $6. It's interesting, right?
Like, I mean, I guess they need to simulate the economy over there, but
simulate the economy and I guess like inflation and stuff, and they're taking the approach where it's like, yeah, fuck it, give more cash, right? Give more money so they don't complain. I'm going off of Chinese crypto Twitter, which has become like a very interesting corner that a lot more people are looking at today than they were a week ago. Ever since this news dropped, everyone and their mother is trying to figure out which tokens are going to pump as a result of Hong Kong legalizing crypto.
Interesting. Yeah.
Filecoin, for whatever reason.
Yeah, Filecoin is ripping. Well, it's already ripping. It's already starting. I don't know why.
Because people think it's like a token that Chinese people will buy.
Why is that?
Hong Kong residents will buy. I don't know. I saw a meme where it was like, you know how at Chinese New Year you say Gong Hei Fa Choi in Kanto, and in, okay, the Kanto one is the more well-known one, so if that didn't land, you won't know the man. Gong Xi Fa Cai. And people are memeing it to be Gong Xi File, F-I-L, Cai.
Wow. It's up 90%
That's the best explanation I've got. Yeah. It had also just been crushed, right? It had been completely, totally decimated because of all of the, like, Barry Silbert FUD, where people thought, like, he was going to have to sell, like, all of the tokens he was bullish on.
That is true.
And they also have a couple of catalysts, right? Like, they're going to launch their, like, smart contract platform.
Interesting.
So, that'll be really interesting, right? Because if it interoperates well with, like, file storage, that genuinely does create different kinds of applications.
Right. That is a useful useful product.
Yeah.
Let's see. Where has this token been in the last year?
Oh, God.
Oh, my God almighty. The high is close to $200. It's now at $8.
Wait, what? In the last year?
In the last year, no, that's 2 years ago.
Still, what?
Yeah. it did get crushed. The high was in early 2021, about 200, a little less than
200. Dude, what? Goodness.
Yeah.
Look at that chart. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's tough. Wow. Now looking back, it's like that little mini scam pump we had in second half of 2021 was just all fueled by Alameda and 3AC Leverage and I don't know what else, Luna and whatever else. Yeah, wild.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like NFTs were ripping too, right? It's not like it was just like soul tokens.
That's true. That's true. But I think the money got injected because of all these tokens ripping.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess it just kind of like, explode. I guess if you're selling ETH and Bitcoin, right, without telling anyone, then it's effectively like everyone's getting leverage.
Yeah, true. You got anything else, Matt?
No, I think that's it for the week. It was a big week. A lot of news.
Yeah, a lot of news. It's good, fun stuff. This has been the Decent Crypto Podcast. This is your Decent Recap. We'll be back in a couple of days with our newest deep dive. Have a good rest of your weekend, everybody. Till then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.